Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
That justice system ultimately ignored all of those bodies and all of the families.
The stories they don't want told.
I was one of many people that were victims who was used.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Holding the powerful to account.
The culture of secrecy needs to be broken.
World of Secrets, the Global Investigations podcast from the BBC. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Mohammed plays an audio message on his phone. Listen, the voice says, I will tell you this only once. You have 2 days to leave the area.
Mohammed's mother Aisha wonders if it's a settler they know well.
He's a settler called Moshe, but we call him Musa. He's the one who kicked us out.
In October 2023, a few days after the Hamas attack on Israel that killed around 1,200 people, Aisha and her husband Nabil were forced off their land in the Jordan Valley area of the West Bank.
We want to go back to our home. Nobody knows of the pain and frustration we are in. My hands keep shaking. I'm anxious even talking to you now.
They now live with their son, Mohammed.
Musa started out with a tent, then he brought a container, then a car with another container. Then they got him 6 or 7 kids to herd the sheep. Then they threatened us with weapons. The police just watch. The Israeli army just watches. Who are we supposed to complain to?
In this BBC Eye investigation, we've been exploring how extremist settlers in the occupied West Bank have been waging a campaign of intimidation and harassment against local Palestinians. I'm Amir Nader, and for the documentary from the BBC World Service, this is West Bank: Settlers, Guns and Sanctions. The man Aisha and Nabil accuse of driving them out is called Moshe Sharvit. Tall and athletic, Moshe often dresses in shorts and a baseball cap. In this promotional video for the farm he established in 2021, he gazes across the broad valley that spreads out beneath him. You can see this place is vast, he says. We're here to look after the land that was abandoned until we came. Land that the local Palestinians say is theirs. In a series of idealized images that evoke the pioneer farmer, Moshe saunters over to his tractor and settles at the wheel. There's a pitchfork stuck in a bale of straw, and an Israeli flag flutters from a pole. And yet tucked into the back of his shorts is a handgun, a hint at the other side of Moshe Sharvit. In other videos shot on mobile phones, we see him carrying an even bigger gun, engaging in disputes with Palestinians and peace activists. Locals say that since the war in Gaza began, Moshe Sharvit has forced several Palestinian families from their homes in the Jordan Valley. Moshe Sharvit's farm is what's known as an outpost, established without permission from the Israeli government. So it's illegal. The authorities have ordered its demolition, but Moshe is undeterred. Moshe Sharvit is part of a movement to expand Israeli territory that goes back decades. After the 1967 war between Israel and its Arab neighbours, Israel occupied the West Bank and Gaza. And since the outbreak of war last year, some settlers have stepped up their efforts in the West Bank. On a road out of Jerusalem, heading northeast into the West Bank, where the hills begin to descend into the Jordan Valley, we see evidence of this. Deserted farm buildings.
We're going now to an area which is east of Ramallah, northeast of Jerusalem. It's an area which actually was one of the safest in the West Bank in terms of Palestinians' daily life.
Our guide is Dror Etkes, an Israeli activist who has spent more than two decades tracking Israeli settlements in the West Bank.
What happened is that in the last 5-6 years, a series of herding outposts had been established in this area, and they had changed completely the situation on the ground. It had become one of the most violent areas, and it has to do with the type of settlers which are establishing and living and expanding these herding outposts.
Herding outposts are different to the other Israeli settlements in the West Bank. These outposts often consist of a small group of buildings or tents surrounded by farmland. They have no clearly defined boundaries, and there's another important difference. Where the bigger urban settlements usually have Israeli government approval, these rural outposts don't. Under Israeli law, they are illegal. The UN says that either kind of settlement in the occupied West Bank is unlawful. Israel rejects this.
Now, take a look to the right, you will see one of the Palestinian communities which had been displaced. Yeah. This is how a displaced community looks like.
It's an abandoned farm.
I'm looking inside one of the shacks now, and I could see old mattresses, bottles, water containers. The kitchen has a dish rack. The sort of scattered items of a family who've left in a rush.
Dror tells us the Palestinian farmers left because they were being threatened by Jewish settlers.
Settlers supported by military, of course. I mean, it's never only settlers. It's never, ever. It's always settlers can do whatever they want because they're supported by military. The idea is to displace communities in order to, terrible word, to clean the area from Palestinian presence.
School books on the floor, English language books, Arabic literature, Hebrew, a book about the strategy of business, discarded blankets, beds. The windows have been smashed. It looks very much like after the family here fled, that others came subsequently and smashed up the place.
There are now more than 500,000 settlers in the West Bank, living among 3 million Palestinians. Most of the settlers live in one of the estimated 140 urban settlements that have been established. A smaller number occupy roughly 200 outposts. The settlers in these illegal outposts have been boosted by the rise of ultra-nationalist politicians. They now hold powerful positions in the government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. People like Itamar Ben-Gvir, the Israeli National Security Minister.
My right and my wife and my children's right to move around the roads of Judea and Samaria is more important than the Arabs' right to free movement. Sorry, Muhammad, but that's the reality. That's the truth. My right to life takes priority over the right to free movement.
The Judea and Samaria he's referring to are the old biblical provinces that today form the West Bank. It's a deliberately provocative speech. Ultranationalist politicians like Mr. Ben-Gvir want to establish new outposts all over the West Bank and expand existing ones. Outposts like Havot Yair, just across the valley from the Palestinian town of Qarawat Beni Hassan.
It has existed for something like 22 years, almost 23. We were the fifth family to come here.
This is Ayala Barshol. Like many of the women here, she's dressed in a long skirt and headscarf.
It's hard to imagine, but there was nothing here. It has always been a dream to expand the settlement and live here.
Havot Yair is a developed, modern-looking outpost with well-built houses overlooking the valley below. It's home to around 100 families. It's important, she says, to take possession of this land in order to settle it. This land belongs to us. This, of course, is disputed. The Palestinians say it's their land, and Ayala admits that the outpost is illegal.
Today we are considered a young settlement. It means that we still don't have legal approval for construction. This means that if I want to build a house in Chavot Ya'ir, I can't apply for a mortgage.
And even without legal approval, the residents of Chavot Ya'ir are determined to make clear to the Palestinians that they are here to stay. So today, a group of them are hiking into the valley to establish their presence on the ground.
The settlement has no fence for a reason, so they won't know where they could end up, so it will always be vague.
They, meaning her Palestinian neighbors.
Why do people have this perception that we are crazy and violent and that we go and fight every morning? I think it's not fair. I think they are portraying us without knowing us. But we totally live an ordinary, normal life here. A good bourgeois life, and that's a good thing.
The UN says that 17 settlers have been injured by Palestinians since October the 7th. But a much higher number, over 230 Palestinians, have been injured by settlers. One of them is Mohammed Marai, who lives in the town of Qarawat Beni Hassan, just across the valley from Ayla's home in Chavot Ya'ir. Mohammed's left arm is wrapped in heavy bandages, the result of a gunshot wound. It all goes back to an incident in December 2023.
I was working with my father and we were told that some settlers had come. They were attacking and burning houses, throwing stones. I went up towards my brother's house and one of the settlers started shooting. That's when I was hit.
Mohammed tells us that he now needs plastic surgery and a skin graft. The BBC has analysed more than 120 photos and videos and spoken with many Palestinians in Qarawat Beni Hassan to try and establish what happened when a group of Israeli settlers arrived in the town that day. Here, for example, a car has been pushed halfway down the hill and set on fire. The flames burn bright and a thick column of black smoke rises above the houses. In other videos, you can clearly see an Israeli army unit on the scene, but they don't do anything when the settlers damage property. Mohammed takes us to the spot where he was shot.
I was here. He was over on that side. He was crouching on one knee and aiming his gun. I was hitting this way. He shot my left arm. I turned. I wanted to get away from him. He shot me in the side.
The moment that Mohammed was shot wasn't captured on film, or who shot him. But Mohammed says he saw who shot him.
I know it was Eden from his clothes. The way he's dressed, his gun, he has long hair. He's well known. I saw him when he shot me.
Mohammed identifies Eden Levy, a settler who established an illegal outpost outside Qarawat Beni Hassan 2 years ago, an encampment of black tents set up on the hill opposite. Other eyewitnesses told us they saw Eden Levy firing his rifle towards Palestinians that day. One man who says he was less than 2 metres from Mohammed told the BBC that he also saw Eden shoot Mohammed.
He wants us to leave the area and our homes. He would kick us out of Qarawa if he could. I have an uncle who has 300 sheep. He used to steal them. He's well known.
This isn't the first time that Eden Levy had been present during violent incidents. In videos from 2021, he can be seen during campaigns to force Palestinians out of their homes in East Jerusalem. A man in his late 20s with a dark beard and a distinctive patterned kippah on his head. Eden Levy declined to answer our questions about what happened in Qarawat Beni Hassan on December the 2nd, but his lawyer gave us this statement.
We strongly reject the unfounded claims and accusations directed at our client regarding the events that occurred in Qarawat Beni Hassan. Our client, along with 10 other armed civilians, fired warning shots into the air until the arrival of the IDF forces.
The statement continues.
Our client's weapon was taken for a ballistics examination. This examination fully exonerated our client, and his weapon has since been returned to him.
Eden Levy has not been charged with any offence in connection with the incident in Karawit Beni Hassan on December the 2nd. We put our findings to the IDF, and they told us that on that day, a settler was hit by a stone and slightly injured. They added that a weapon was confiscated from the owner of the farm, and the events of the 2nd of December were being investigated and were passed on to the police. The Israel police didn't respond to our questions. In May this year, Eden Levy was sanctioned by the British government for what it called his involvement in threatening and perpetrating acts of aggression and violence against Palestinian individuals in October last year. You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
That justice system ultimately ignored all of those bodies and all of the families.
The stories they don't want told.
I was one of many people that were victims who was used.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Holding the powerful to account.
The culture of secrecy needs to be broken.
World of Secrets, the Global Investigations podcast from the BBC. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Amir Nader, and this is West Bank, Settlers, Guns and Sanctions. The attack on Karawit Beni Hassan is one of a number of recent incidents where Israeli army soldiers are accused of standing by and failing to prevent settler-led violence. We asked the IDF to speak to us about this. They declined. So we turned to Avi Mizrahi, a former head of the Israeli army in the West Bank.
The IDF is being accused by both sides that it doesn't do its job, but I'm telling you that they do the job, and it's a very hard job, and they're trying to fulfill the mission in the best way that they can.
He claims that most of the settlers in the West Bank are law-abiding Israeli citizens, but he acknowledges the problems created by illegal outposts.
Whenever you put outposts illegally in the area, it brings tense with the Palestinians.
Tensions with the Palestinians.
Now, the IDF is protecting, first of all, the Israelis. Yeah. This is his role. He's supposed to allow a normal life in the entire West Bank, also for the Palestinians. And he's doing his best. But, yes, I do admit that sometimes when you have the Palestinians in one side and the Israelis in one side, you can find out that it's not a mutual treatment to both sides.
And he says that at the moment, the Israeli government is not trying to calm the tensions.
In the contrary, they are bringing them up. Because now the outposts, or what we called back then, illegal at that time, outposts are being in the area with the authorization of the government, with the backup of the government. And that's different from the time that I was there. Those people in those outposts, they don't fear for their life. They know that they can defend themselves. They take in account that they can be harmed. But they still do it because their ideology is that it's our land, we should be there, and I don't care about what the Israel government is saying.
Avi Mizrahi is talking about settlers like Moshe Sharvit, who Aisha and Nabil Shteya say forced them off their land. He's accused by the British government of doing the same to 20 Palestinian families. Like Eden Levy, he's been sanctioned in the course of us following his activities, not only by the UK, the US, the EU, Japan and Australia have also sanctioned Moshe. Today, Moshe's got visitors. A group of 20 or so who've come to look round the farm. Before the tour, they sit and listen as he explains his vision.
We're one small farm, one family and another family that joined us a year ago. We're seizing here a few thousands of dunam. It's about the size of a not so small city.
A few thousand dunam, that's a few square kilometres, as he says, the size of a small city.
The biggest regret when we built settlements was that we got stuck within the fences and didn't expand. Eventually, the space is the most important thing here. This farm is very important, but the most important thing for us is the surrounding area. The farm today has around 7,000 dunams of open land which no one enters. No one can come close because they understand that the people who come here understand this is their country, and they come here to stay.
Claims like this lie at the core of the dispute between Palestinians and Israeli settlers in the West Bank, because for people like Aisha and Nabil, who have been cultivating this land for generations, this land is theirs.
We plant wheat on this land every year. That's our source of income. My father, grandfather and uncles bought the land in 1953 from the Jordanian government.
But Nabil and Aisha have legal difficulties of their own. Their land lies in an area of the occupied West Bank in which, under the 1993 Oslo Agreement, they need Israeli government approval for any construction. Palestinians almost never get this approval, which makes homes like that of Nabil and Aisha illegal and subject to demolition. Nabil, though, insists that the land is his.
This farmland is mine. 10 dunams here, 20 dunams there, and 10 dunams around the house. That's my home.
Two months after they were forced off their land, the couple have come back to see what remains. As Nabil walks up to his house, he's accompanied by Israeli peace activists who are here to support the family. Two teenage boys from Moshe's outpost lean on a fence, one of them filming on his phone. Nabil points out the front door that's missing, the water tank that's had its tap broken off, leaving just a hole, the solar panels that have been smashed. All the work of Moshe Sharvit and his gang, he says. Aisha goes inside. In the kitchen, all the cupboard doors have been thrown open and the drawers pulled out. In the living room, the sofas have been slashed so that the foam stuffing shows through. They were kicked out at gunpoint, she says, telling us that Moshe Sharvit put a gun to her head. She sold her bracelet to build this house, she says. 50 years, she repeats. 50 years, 50 years she's been on this land. Herding outposts like the kind set up by Moshe Sharvit are just one part of a bigger settler network which have received support from powerful groups with strong ties to the Israeli state. We've uncovered one organisation that provides land that has been used for outposts that, under Israeli law, are illegal. It's called the World Zionist Organisation, or WZO. It's existed for more than 100 years and was instrumental in the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948.
One of its key departments is the Settlement Division, which describes itself as an arm of the Israeli state. Here's the activist Dror Etkes again.
It's a body which runs very, very, very big part of a land which had been expropriated by the Israeli authorities in the West Bank to different Israeli settlements or settlers.
I'm now looking at some of the documents obtained by the settlement watchdog Peace Now, who've shared them with us, their contracts, and in some places the names have been redacted, in other places the names have been left on. What's clear is they are agreements between the Settlement Division and settlers, whereby the Settlement Division have allocated large areas of land for grazing and farming in the West Bank, but it does say clearly here that they forbid the building of any permanent structures.
What you see here, you can see this is a contract between the WZO, yeah, and a settler which will hide his name.
Dror Etkes has come with us to the Jordan Valley, close to where Moshe has set up his outpost.
And you can see this is the area which was allocated to him, the red stains on the map, yeah. This is here, this is where we are right now. There's only one settler here in the area where the herd. This is Moshe Sharvit.
The name of the settler on the contract has been redacted, so we can't be sure that it is indeed Moshe Sharvit, but the date matches when he arrived to the area. In other contracts, we've also found evidence of the WZO allocating land to other settlers who've set up illegal outposts. Two of these settlers are now subject to international sanctions. One of them is Eden Levy, the settler we met earlier. Eden Levy's lawyers told the BBC that his farming outpost had been assigned to him by the official authorities and that he had a contract he'd signed with the settlement division. The WZO didn't respond to our questions about allocating land to people who break the law by setting up outposts.
We're now on the road to Moshe Sharvit's farm. For over half a year, we've been following his activities and met some of the families who accuse him of using violence and forcing them out of their homes. In that time, he's been sanctioned by the British government and others for forcing out around 20 families from this area. That's around 100 people. He hasn't responded to any of our attempts to try and speak with him, so now is our chance to try and put our questions to him.
Moshe comes to meet us outside the farm gate. His brother David follows him, filming us on his mobile. He has what looks like an assault rifle over his shoulder. Moshe has his handgun poking out of his waistband.
We want to speak with you about the sanctions.
I don't want to talk to you.
We've spoken to a lot of the Palestinian families here who say that you've used violence on them and forced them out of their homes.
Maybe it's a different Moshe. I don't know him.
It was definitely you, we filmed you. We've spoken to a Palestinian woman who says you put a gun to her head.
I'm sorry, I don't know about it. Maybe it's another Moshe. There are a lot of Moshes here. It's a very common name in Israel.
No, it was you, Moshe Sharvit, who sanctioned internationally.
I'm not Moshe Sharvit. I'm sorry. Maybe it's someone who looks like me.
This is Moshe Sharvit, unquestionably. The Moshe Sharvit we've seen on mobile phone footage arguing with peace activists and on Israeli TV complaining about the British sanctions. The Moshe Sharvit who appears in his own promotional videos. The Moshe Sharvit Aisha accuses of putting a gun to her head.
Will you let the Palestinian families return to this area?
He says again that he doesn't know what I'm talking about. And then he lifts a hand in mock salute, winks at me, and turns away. His brother is still filming us as they stride back towards the farm. West Bank, Settlers, Guns and Sanctions was a BBCI investigation presented by me, Amir Nader. The producer was Tim Mansell.
That justice system ultimately ignored all of those bodies and all of the families.
The stories they don't want told.
I was one of many people that were victims who was used.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Holding the powerful to account.
The culture of secrecy needs to be broken.
World of Secrets, the Global Investigations podcast from the BBC. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.